We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and FM 90.9 HD2. We're streaming online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. John Yao enjoys bird watching from his armchair. For him, the list serious birders keep the life list is pretty short. He says, you could just about get the whole thing on a cocktail napkin. Nevertheless, Yao watches his backyard birds seriously. He says if you're like him, and I'm betting many of us are, knowing what they look like just whets your appetite for knowing what they're up to. John Yao is our guest this afternoon. We'll talk about the pleasures of watching birds in our backyards and learn some of the things he's discovered about birds, things he's written about in the book, The Armchair Birder, Discovering the Secret Lives of Familiar Birds. The book takes a look at 42 species over the course of the seasons, beginning in spring with the Carolina wren and wrapping up in winter with the red-tailed and Cooper's hawks. John Yao is a freelance writer and former senior editor at Longstreet Press in Atlanta. He joins us this afternoon by phone from his home, I do believe, in Georgia. John Yao's book, The Armchair Birder, Discovering the Secret Lives of Familiar Birds, is published by the University of North Carolina Press. John Yao, it's good to talk with you. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Celeste. Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted.
My pleasure to talk with you. I've fallen in love with your book.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about armchair birding. Some time ago, in 1995, you moved from the suburbs to the country. How did that change your armchair birding experience?
That's a good question. I've always had some interest. I come from a long line of feeder hangers. So even as a kid, I knew my cardinals from my chickadees. But, in 95, we moved from the suburbs here into this little piece of woodland up north of Atlanta, and I began to see birds that I didn't see in the suburbs. I saw birds like indigo buntings and yellow-billed cuckoos and tanagers and rose-breasted grosbeaks, and this propelled me on this journey that culminated in the book. Another thing that happened shortly thereafter, 5 years thereafter, but you mentioned that I am the former senior editor at Longstreet Press. Let's say that I'm the former senior editor at the former Longstreet Press. In about the year 2000, the publishing company was headed down the drain. That was not bad news for me. Don't cry for me, Illinois. All that meant was that I got to come home and work. So that these birds that I was enjoying, I got to enjoy more of. As a writer, I'm sitting right now up in my loft study in this little log home in the woods, and I can look at the computer screen or I can look out the window at five bird feeders, and at a bluebird house. And I much prefer to do that.
Yeah, that's a good gig.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, although it's sad to hear about the demise of another publishing house.
Well, it is, and I know that it happens a lot to small publishing houses. We tried for 12 years to be independent general publisher. That's the hardest thing to be. If you're going to be a small publisher, you really need to have a niche and to mine that niche thoroughly. We didn't really have that. We wanted to do a little bit of everything and found ultimately that it couldn't be done, at least not in our case. We had a good run, though. We had a lot of fun and no regrets.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good to hear. So over the last 14, 15 years there in the woodland that you've moved to, have you noticed any changes in population?
Human or bird?
Bird.
You know, unfortunately, a lot of changes in the human population. But as for the birds, you know, I do watch closely, and I see interesting things. The first spring we were here, immediately hung a feeder, of course, and in late April, in flew a male rose-breasted grosbeak. I'd never seen that bird, and man, wow, that's a spectacular bird. I dropped my spoon in my cereal bowl. And then I found that in late April and early May, every year, they would come through. They don't nest here. They come through and then nest up in Tennessee or parts further north. And I would get a pair or two pairs or three or four pairs. Sometimes I'd see five or six birds at one time. And then suddenly in 2003, they weren't there. And in 2004, they weren't there. 2005, they weren't there. Then suddenly, they came back. Why? I have no idea. This year, I have I had all in the late winter and early spring, I had a flock of 40 or 50 pine siskins on the feeders and on the ground below. I mean, they were eating me out of house and home. I'd never seen nearly that many. I'd have two or three every winter. But at the same time, while I had all those birds, I did not have my favorite, my trusty yellow-billed woodpecker that would come to the feeder every day all winter long, and I have not seen him, and that troubles me a little bit. Again, who knows the reasons? Maybe he's just moved over to a neighbor's feeder, and that would be fine. But with so much development coming out this way, I always wonder whether the changes are going to be permanent or not.
Well, that tells us the story of the human population, then.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
And the loss of bird habitat, which is an old story, but not one that's going to go away.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, of course, that I think most of us have seen is this big boom in the population of Canada geese. This morning, I was driving into the parking lot here on the campus of the University of Illinois, and there were two geese greeting there to greet me.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Without telling you how old I am now, I will say that I was 35 years old before I ever saw a Canada goose. And you can't throw a dead cat now without hitting a Canada goose. They are everywhere. If there's a little puddle of water and a little green sward of Bermuda grass, they are all over it. They're on every golf course, they're in every park. I've never seen anything like it. Now, that is a recent change. In fact, as a bit of an aside about the book, it's based to some extent on my own observations, but also to some extent on my reading about birds, which I've thoroughly enjoyed, and I particularly enjoyed reading John James Audubon, whom, of course, we know as the fabulous bird illustrator, but man, was he a fabulous writer about birds. He wrote a wonderful, just a huge volume called The Ornithological Biography, not widely available. I found a couple of used copies online at, antique bookstores selling online, but they were a little more expensive than I could afford. At any rate, I've managed to read excerpts from this book. And he says that back when he was writing in the 1830s, and he said that the constitution of the Canada goose was not suited to breeding in the South. Well, that has proven to be way wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They breed in the South. They stay in the South. Although, of course, many do migrate up north as well.
Yeah. Why has this bird been so successful recently?
I think that it's a case, at least to some extent, it's a case of the success of wildlife management programs. This is a bird that's widely hunted, and I think that steps have been taken in the past to limit the take and to protect environments of the geese, and the geese responded successfully to those efforts. Now all those efforts have changed from preservation to population management.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're seeing now programs that try to lure geese to go this place or that place and get them out of the way of the busy human beings who find themselves annoyed by the threat of stepping in goose droppings wherever they go.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned John James Audubon. Also, you turned to works by Arthur Cleveland Bent and Edward Howe Forbush. I know that birders will know these names, but they're unfamiliar to me. Tell us a little bit about these two fellows and their writings on birds.
I would love to do that, Celeste. Thank you, because I hope these writers meant so much to me in my research, and I frankly, I don't know how familiar they are to many birders, because, of course, Audubon is well-known as an illustrator, but again, he was writing in the 1830s. Arthur Cleveland Bent wrote / edited a 20-volume work called Life Histories of North American Birds that he began in the late 19th century and finished, in about 1930, maybe the late 30s. And he, so he, his writing was, is now ancient history to so many modern people who don't know, their attention spans wand or whatever, and they're not willing to go back and look. His books have been reissued. They were reissued in the 60s by the Dover Press, and many of them can be found online now, sometimes for as little as $4 or $5 a volume, and sometimes more than that. I managed to collect 13 or 14 of the 20 volumes for my research, and each one of them is a treasured possession. Edward Howe Forbush was the state ornithologist in Massachusetts back in the early 20th century. He wrote a three-volume work about the birds of Massachusetts, and that book was condensed into a fabulous book that I do have now called A Natural History of American Birds of Eastern and Central North America. But again, the situation is the same. This is old literature. As an English major and reader and a writer, of course, I value it, and also I value it because the writing is so fabulous. But modern readers just might not know these writers, and so I'm delighted to modern birders at it. So I'm delighted to have an opportunity to speak about them and to hopefully reintroduce these writers to some people who might be interested.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go seek them out now.
I hope you do. You'll enjoy them, I'm sure.
Okay. John Yao is our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. He's a writer, is the author of The Armchair Birder, Discovering the Secret Lives of Familiar Birds. My name is Celeste Quinn. This is the Afternoon Magazine. You can join us with a telephone call this afternoon. We'd love to hear from you, your questions, comments, stories about bird watching. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. We also have a toll-free number, that number, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. You begin the book with a look at the Carolina wren. I love this bird. How does such a little bird contain such a big voice?
I wish I knew. But isn't that the truth? It's just such a fabulous, joyful song. and it cheers me up, and I know millions of people up all spring long. It's really my first harbinger of spring, when that little wren cranks up, mm-hmm. and brings the springtime in. But I've had wonderful experiences with that bird. He seems to want to build his nest, or he and she want to build the nest on top of an upturned mop in the garage. that just seems to be the one place they love the most. I finally had to move the mop once that nest was taken over by a milk snake, which moved in and ate the little hatchlings. But as soon as we moved the nest, as soon as we moved the mop out of the garage, the wrens built their next nest in my wife's asparagus fern hanging on the front porch. That was a good place. The snakes were less likely to get them, and we got to sit there in our rocking chairs on the front porch and watch them feed their young all during the early summer. But, yeah, just a wonderful bird, a joyful bird, so flighty and pretty, and that wonderful noise.
Yeah. I was delighted to read the story that this couple of wrens moved out of your garage and into the fern hanging on the front porch, because each year at about this time I hang a Boston fern on the front porch, and I always have a couple of wrens in there making it a home.
Isn't that funny? Do you get to climb up and look down in there?
I kind of leave them alone. I first discovered that they were in there when I watered one evening,
right,
after dark, and they,
yeah,
flew out, and,
yeah,
and we were all three of us were upset. But I watered during the day, and then I put that fern back up there, and I can sit on the porch, and you know, and or I can look out the living room or the window of the study, and we can watch them. But yeah, I try and keep out of there.
Well, that's a good idea. And I'm just a little too intrusive, you know. I have to have a look, so I don't mind climbing up and peering in. But I ask because their nest, from the outside, it just looks like they've just jumbled a bunch of leaves together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just looks so messy and unkempt and unprepossessing. But if you do climb up and take a look down in, the interior of it is so carefully crafted. And of course, it's a side entrance. The Latin name is troglodytes. These wrens are quote-unquote cave dwellers. So they fly in from the side into this little cavern that they've built in there. And it's such a pretty sight. And then they have those tiny, tiny little eggs down there at the bottom. It's always, always a treat.
Mm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, John Yao, author of The Armchair Birder. Let's take a call now. Let me go first to a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I have a comment about the Canada geese.
Yeah.
Question, also a question.
Okay.
With a hint of sadness to it. But about the Canada geese, I wonder if part of it isn't that with the system of interstates, you know, at every interstate interchange there's a pond.
Right.
Because they dug out, you know, the earth to build the bridge going over.
Right.
And now with, you know, whatever you want to call them, I call them box house communities with retention ponds.
Right.
Have also become very popular.
Uh-huh.
And the same with, like, you know, retail villages like we have in the north of Champaign here. There's also a lot of retention ponds.
Yeah.
I mean, that just seems like the habitat for them, available habitat for them, has just exploded.
Exactly. You're so right. That's a good point. In fact, back in my day job days, when I worked at Longstreet Press in Atlanta, we lived in it. Our office was in a little office complex, and like so many of these complexes, and like the places you're talking about, there was a little piece of parkland where people could take their lunches, mm-hmm, out of their offices, mm-hmm, and in the along with the piece of parkland was the little retention pond. And I mean, geese were just all over this place. And another thing I think along the same lines is the explosion of golf courses. Geese,
yeah,
love golf courses because there's grass and there's lakes.
Right.
And
yeah,
and so where there's grass and there's lakes, there's geese.
There's geese.
Yeah.
And my question was about, we have a cat who's a mighty hunter.
Yeah.
And I have to do something because I came home and I found another cardinal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dismembered and
right.
Mm-hmm. Eaten on our welcome mat. And
right.
I wonder, does putting a bell on them, is that effective?
Bell the cat. I don't know. Frankly, I don't know what the solution to that problem is. Cats are just going to kill birds. You could declaw the cat, but then the cat could possibly have problems with predators who wanted to prey on your cat. So that's a problem. That's a problem of many homeowners and many cat owners. When we moved up into the woods, we changed from cats to dogs. So So I don't happen to have that problem. I just don't know what that solution is. Bird lovers.
When we lose our cats, we end up with mice.
Right. Of course. Well, that's going to be yours to deal with. The armchair birder can't help you with that one. But I feel for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks for calling. I say keep the cat inside, in the armchair with you.
That's not a bad dog.
We have had cats, and they've always been indoor, and they've seemed to just lead the life of Riley.
So, right. Yeah. Right. Sure.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Let's take another call.
Okay.
Champagne line two. Hi.
Hi. It's so much fun to listen to this conversation. Mercifully, we don't have cats in the house, but our neighbors seem to supply plenty of them, and they do pose a real risk. But as I was listening to your conversation, I grew up with a dad who was a great lover of birds and an observer of birds, and I would say that the rose-breasted grosbeak was probably his absolute favorite. He always referred to it as Old Handsome, so that when Old Handsome makes a visit here in Champaign, and it's not very often, I'm staring at one right now, along with five or six adorable turquoise indigo buntings that are just so darn cute.
Oh, they're so beautiful.
Oh, they are. That almost transcendent iridescent color is just wonderful.
Yeah.
But I can't seem to persuade the orioles. I guess they've flown by and looked at the two little lakes of watered down grape jelly out here. No matter how much we change it now, the rain follows quickly behind. But this is the best time of year in Champaign-Urbana to watch the birds migrating through.
Isn't it fun?
It is just a ball.
Now that you mention it, you've frightened me a little bit because the rose-breasted grosbeaks come through here so regularly, and it always begins at the beginning of the last week in April and lasts through the first week in May, and I haven't seen them yet, so they're a week late.
It does seem to, how long they stay, seems to depend quite a bit on the weather, how cold, how rainy, how sunny, so I don't know how it will affect them this year.
Right.
But I, too, am a little bit concerned because it certainly isn't very appealing out there for right now. But I'll hang up and just continue listening, but this is just a charming conversation.
Well,
thanks so much.
Well, are you still there?
Yes.
Let me thank you for Old Handsome. May I borrow that from your dad?
Isn't that just a great name?
It's fabulous. Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye. Thanks for the call. Old Handsome, that's lovely.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Well, let's take another call. Listener on line three in Urbana. Hi.
Okay. Hi. We've been having interesting experiences with the Carolina Wren. One year they decided to nest in our upside-down whitewater canoe that was hanging in the carport, and we needed to go canoeing. They had already occupied the canoe, so I decided to experiment, and I set up a ladder so I could get up there to the cockpit of the canoe, and one of them anyway, and I gradually pulled the nest toward the opening over the course of several hours, and then I hung up a green recycling bucket next to the canoe, and I transferred the nest over to that. They were feeding their babies, and they were a little bit puzzled at first when I transferred it, but I had left the ladder so they could perch and figure it out, and they did. They figured it out, and they just kept feeding the babies in the new location. I was able to go canoeing.
How very resourceful of you. I would have told you to get a new canoe.
They also took over my husband's nice leather tool belt last spring. that was hanging in a tool shed.
Yeah.
And they raised two sets of babies. We tried to discourage them between broods. I didn't know that they did two broods. And with the second brood, we needed to be able to get in the space without disturbing the mother, so we hung it on the door of the tool shed so that she could go in and out, and we could go in and out from another door. And she actually let me get quite close to take pictures of her coming to feed the babies. It took her a bit to get used to my presence, but
yeah,
she was determined to feed them.
Yeah.
The other thing that has happened this year, and this is my husband's family has a farm in Ohio, and when we go out there, we briefly hang up or fill up the bird feeder and put out suet. And it's an 80-acre farm, and so we don't have the competition from much from really nearby neighbors in terms of other bird feeders.
Right.
We've had bluebirds for a long time, ever since I put up a set of bluebird houses. And I would always just see flashes of them. They would never come close. But they must have gotten really curious about this humongous amount of traffic that comes to the bird feeders. The birds, I'm sure, send a scout out and say, ah, somebody's there. They're going to put seed in the feeder and suet out. And they all mob the feeders. And this year, the bluebirds came to the suet feeder.
I was going to ask you if they'd tried the suet.
I had never seen that before. Well, they had difficulty hanging on, but what they figured out they could do was to pick it off the top of the feeder below.
Right.
Other birds had dropped it down and on the hedge below, and it's really lovely to have them 3 feet away from you looking out of the kitchen window and seeing this gorgeous blue.
Isn't that great? I have a bluebird box that 3 years ago the bluebirds raised a nice nest full of fledglings in. Then they came back last year and started to build a nest and were run out by a pair of titmice. And the titmice raised their babies. And this year the bluebirds came back and were run out by the chickadees. And the chickadees are right now raising their babies in the bluebird box. And all of this surprises me because the bluebirds have a reputation for being quite aggressive in the defense of their box and of their nest. And the bluebirds that are coming to me have seemed to have lost their temerity and are giving in easily to these alien species.
Mm. I also wanted to mention to listeners that there's, and I've mentioned this before, there's a really lovely CD set called Birding by Ear that
yes,
makes it easier to learn the common bird songs and calls.
Yeah,
and
that's a great. I have that too. It's a wonderful thing.
And I would listen to it in the car. It takes a while to learn them, even so. But I was out in the yard yesterday. My husband had noticed a Baltimore Oriole, and I heard this song that I wasn't in my repertoire. So I looked around and looked up, and I finally saw, and it was the Baltimore Oriole. And I would not have seen it up high in the tree if I had not identified it or known that I didn't know the call and
right,
that it was worth looking for. Thanks so much. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah.
You want to follow up on any of that, John?
Only to say that that you folks up in Illinois are very lucky to have that Baltimore Oriole. He doesn't. I'm sure there are places in Georgia that those birds migrate through, but they do not migrate through my woods, and I don't believe that I've ever seen one.
Mm. Okay, let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. I just want to come in on the cat thing. One of our Audubon members is also an owner and lover of cats, and he has a screened-in porch. And what he did to sort of give his cats the outdoor experience is, I think it's an old tree branch that he has on his porch, and he cut a cat door in his front door. And when he comes home from work, if it has been snowing, he sees that even on the coldest days, the cats like to go out on the porch and climb on the tree limb and look and listen. And, you know, you can give your cat an outdoor experience and protect the birds. I'll hang up because my dog is...
Wow.
The dog just ate the cat, I'm afraid.
Whoa. Oh, Somebody's at the door, maybe, huh?
Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great idea.
It is a good idea.
Yeah. Well, last night, as we were, my husband and I were talking about birds, and I was talking about the armchair birder, we got online and we went to the Cornell website and played. That's another place to learn bird song.
Yes.
And that really intrigued the cat as well.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
Yeah. He was all ears.
Let me say another word about Cornell, since you brought it up.
Okay.
In addition to those three great classic writers that I used so heavily in my book, you know, I found that as wonderful as they were and as much as I loved them, they weren't always right. I mean, we do have new information since they wrote. And the best place that I found for that was the Birds of North America Online, which is an effort by the Cornell Lab and some partners, and they have put this is a subscription deal. You pay $40 a year for access to this database, but once you do that, once you join this organization, you can call up any bird on your computer, get photos, calls, video, and everything, really everything that is known about that bird's behavior. I mean, that's a fabulous resource that I recommend to all our listeners out there.
Okay, very good. Let's take another call. Next we go to Belgium, Illinois, line 4. Hi.
Hello. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Hey.
Yesterday afternoon, Mr. Inge on this same radio station had a discussion about companion pets, and I called in and spoke there too. And what my situation is about is that I have about 10 acres that I just let birds have, okay?
Right.
Let it grow up into brush and trees. And,
right.
And I strongly make it nice for birds.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, my neighbors have lots of cats.
Yeah.
And I catch them. I put them in have-a-hearts and I take them to the animal control.
Uh-huh.
And the discussion I had with the animal control officer was this. I said, I keep some of them I catch several times.
Right.
There seems to be some point at which the owner should be castigated, fined, taking the cat away, some kind of punishment. Obviously, the cat is doing just what the cat should do, but the owner is responsible.
Right.
And since our wildlife is having such a huge problem, I wish there was some way we could push animal control into helping us with this problem.
That's a good thought. Arthur Cleveland Bent's solution was a little bit easier than that, but probably more complicated when you bring the neighbors in. But he just believed that any cat that wasn't yours should be shot on sight.
Well, I've threatened that, but that leads to other problems.
Yes, it does. It does. But I think you're right. I think there's a role for animal control there. But I guess their argument would be that they have larger fish to fry. So, what are you going to do?
Well, maybe take them a long ways away and then let them go.
Yeah.
It's some other animal control.
Right.
Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, John Yao. He's a writer and an editor. He's the author of The Armchair Birder, Discovering the Secret Lives of Familiar Birds. So what birds are you seeing in your Georgia backyard at this time of the year?
Well, oh, Lordy. I guess two evenings ago, I had been up in Asheville, North Carolina, at a book signing up there, and had been so anxious to come back home to see how my chickadees were doing in the bluebird house, and to see how my phoebes were doing. They like to nest every year on the beam that runs under the eave on the front porch, and those birds were fine. I was happy to see, but as I was checking on them, I heard that distinctive chick burr, chick burr, chick burr, and I knew that the fabulous bird of summer had arrived, the scarlet tanager.
Mm.
And there he was. Usually they're so high up in the newly leaved trees that it's difficult to see them, but this one had done me the favor of flying down into relatively low-lying branch of a pine tree just sitting there as spectacular as he could be. So I'm seeing the scarlet tanager, I'm happy to say. I'm hearing the summer tanager. That call note is so distinctive, you know immediately that which one you have. The summer tanager goes picky-tucky-tuck, picky-tucky-tuck. Their songs, both those tanagers have a lovely song, multi-phrase, lots of whistling, sort of classic bird song, but to me they sound just alike, so I don't know which one I have until I hear the distinctive call note. Hmm. But of course, I don't know, do you have many goldfinch up there, Celeste?
Yeah, I think we do. This your book is spurring me now to become a better observer.
Right, right.
And well, to really start looking.
Yeah.
I know we have them, but I don't, you know, I couldn't say much more than that.
Well, that's a wonderful bird down in these parts. Frankly, I didn't really see them much, if at all, in the suburbs, but here in the woods, they are numerous and active and just absolutely spectacular. They stay all year, but when they have their winter molt, at the end of the summer, they just turn gray and blah and totally unremarkable. But then here comes April, and they burst out into this lemon yellow color with jet black wings, and they're just fabulous to look at. So I'm always happy to see those. I see those every day. And then, of course, I have the, you know, the usual, the cardinals and the chickadees and titmice and the wrens and the doves and all of those typical feeder birds.
Yeah. Well, I'm now recalling that we do have goldfinch that show up in a pine tree that we have in the front yard, and they're a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah.
Let's take another call.
Okay.
Listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hello, is that me?
That's you.
I have an identification question.
Okay.
It's a bird call, and it's a slightly hooty sound. It's not a real pure whistle, but I can't whistle, so I'm going to sing it. It goes, la, 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 la. Can you identify that?
No.
Okay.
I don't think I can. Not right off the bat.
That's okay. That's fine. These are out in my backyard, and I've never seen one, so I can't give you a visual description. But anyway, thanks a lot.
It's not. Excuse me. Is it? Are you sure it's not a dove?
I don't know if it's a dove. I don't think it's a dove.
But you said it sounds like something like a hooty sound.
Yeah, it goes up a fifth.
Uh-huh.
La 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 la.
Yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised if it were a mourning dove.
Oh, that's a possibility.
You might try to confirm that by going to one of these places online where you can listen to bird call or get that CD that another caller talked about, but. Sounds to me like it could be a morning dove.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
You're
bye-bye.
Very welcome. Next we go to Farmersburg, Indiana, line four. Hi.
Hi. I expect that is a morning dove. It goes hoo hoo.
Yeah, right.
Do 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 do.
And if he's listening, that's probably what it is. You know, I want to say a word for the little dirty brown birds, sparrows.
Yeah.
There are, you know, around here at least, 10 that you see regularly, probably 14. Others, and there's a subtle richness in their color, just absolutely wonderful little birds. And, you know, from white-throated and white-crowned and chipping sparrows, and of course, in the winter you get American tree, and, you know, just a wonderful variety. And around here, lark sparrows, which are very, very rare.
Yeah.
And they nest around here. In probably southern Illinois, I know I have them around my house. And just the variety of sparrows, people take them for granted because they don't look closely at them.
That's right.
But the richness of color is tremendous. One other suggestion, Stokes has a three-CD set of bird calls that are much easier to access than Peterson's Birding by Ear.
Okay.
and it has about 390 or 91 bird calls if you get the one for eastern United States.
Yeah.
And it's has a wonderful book with it and much, much easier to identify.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we have goldfinches here. They're year-round.
Right, right.
And people don't notice them in the winter
right.
because they don't have the bright yellow on
yeah,
them.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, enjoy the program.
Well, let's talk about the sparrows for another second. Are you still there?
I'm here.
Have you seen the fox sparrow?
Oh, yeah, we get a lot of fox sparrows. I keep a bird count, and I walk just within a half a mile of my house every day, 3 or 4 miles, and I'll see, this time of year, I'll see 45 or see or hear 45 or 50 species.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we get fox sparrows. I still am seeing white crowned, still seeing white-throated, still seeing occasional savanna, vesper.
Yeah,
And I'm seeing lark sparrows now every day.
Well, you're just very fortunate. I'm glad you're watching those birds closely and appreciating the subtle differences between them. Frankly, you know, many sparrows are among the birds who've come to enjoy urban and suburban environments. And here, deep in the woods, really, where I live, I have enough yard cleared out to open the front door. Other than that, I'm just simply in the middle of the woods, and the sparrows have a hard time finding me.
Well, I'm in the woods too, but there are some fields around. In fact, I'm glad the sparrows enjoy the city because I don't.
Right.
But
yeah,
I'm as far from it as I can get. But there's just a wonderful variety of sparrows.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've seen the fox sparrow here, and what a lovely bird. And also the white-throated sparrow and the song sparrow. But beyond that, that's about the limit that I've had here.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised. I would think you'd have a lot of them there. I know in southern Indiana, southern Illinois, you're going to see a lot of sparrows.
Mm-hmm.
And for people in town, you might be looking for Eurasian collared doves.
Right.
They're increasingly in number, and people will be surprised what's
right.
around.
People
you really would be surprised what's around them.
That's right.
Mm.
It's just another world. But thanks for the visit and the call.
My pleasure.
Next, we go to Champagne, a listener on line two. Hi.
Hi, is this me?
Yep.
Okay, hi there. Love this topic. One of my favorite topics is birds, so I'm pretty excited.
Good.
I wanted to say I also live in the southern part of the county in a rural property, and we do feed the birds, and so we get a lot of migratory birds this time of the year. Coming up pretty soon here, the rose-breasted grosbeaks will come through,
yeah,
and the orioles will come through. At that same time, of course, the goldfinches, as you mentioned, are bright yellow, and the indigo bunting show up.
Yeah,
we have the blue, and then the cardinals are always around, so we have the blue and the red and the yellow and the grosbeaks, and it's very exciting.
I love to look at my feeder and see the blue and the red and the yellow together.
Me
That's just
too.
A special treat.
I take pictures like crazy during
yeah.
that time. I just wanted to comment. Last year, about this time during the migratory season, I did see a bird I had never seen before. I looked up, and it was a wheat ear, and it said that it was kind of a rare bird to see in North America. And I just wondered if you knew anything about the wheat ear, and it only lasted for a day. It was gone after that point, and I took a few pictures of it. But I didn't know too much about it. In my Audubon book, it just said that it was rare.
Don't know a thing about it.
I
wish I did, but there are a lot more species that I don't know anything about than the relatively few species that I do know something about. So I'm afraid I'm no help on that
one. That's okay. Well, I'll sign off by saying that I'm completely jealous that you have scarlet tanagers. I've never seen one.
Oh, man. Keep
that.
Looking. Maybe you'll get lucky.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. And we'll take one more call this afternoon. Listener in Urbana on line three. Hi.
Hi. Just a quick ID, if you could. I've never been able to see this bird. I will get the rhythm wrong, but it's a single note, like something like that. Just on one pitch.
Don't know. Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry. The armchair birder struck out again.
Yeah, okay. Well, one other quick question.
Yeah.
And that is, I grew up in Texas, and I absolutely, my favorite bird is a mockingbird because of their songs.
Right.
And I understand they're, you know, they're in Carbondale. How far north do mockingbirds get? And with global warming, any chance they'll get this far north?
Yes, yes. Walt Whitman in Out of the Cradle Endlessly Rocking, which is set, you know, his famous poem set on Long Island, is a tribute to the mockingbird.
Well, I understand on the East Coast, I've heard about them in Pennsylvania, but for example, and I didn't know about Long Island, but never this far north in the Midwest.
Okay, well, again, you may have a different problem there. I'm not sure where they would get to you, but I think that you know, they're at home in cold weather, so. I don't know why they wouldn't make it to your neck of the woods.
Okay. Well, good. Thank you a lot.
All righty.
Thanks for the call, and thanks to everyone who called. And, John, thank you.
My pleasure.
I hope you'll come back and visit with us again.
I hope I will, too. All you have to do is invite me.
Thank you so much. Okay. Well, look for that invitation. John Yao has been our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. He's the author of The Armchair Birder, Discovering the Secret Lives of Familiar Birds. The book is published by the University of North Carolina Press.